This is Yes Presents Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm Sonali Kolhatkar, Senior Editor at Yes Media. You can find this program at yesmagazine.org, watch it on Free Speech TV, and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. A mere 30 minutes after the Iowa Republican caucuses began on Monday, Associated Press declared former President Donald Trump the winner. Trump beat Ron DeSantis and Nikki Haley by a landslide, grabbing a 30% lead over them. Although Trump is facing 91 criminal indictments, there appears to be little question that he will be the 2024 GOP presidential nominee. What does that mean for American democracy? Joining me to help answer that question is Christina Harvey, Executive Director of Stand Up America. Welcome to the program, Christina.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on today.
So the day after the caucuses, Trump has to defend himself in court against a defamation trial with E. Jean Carroll. This is a presidential candidate who is unlike any other in American history. And apparently Iowa voters, a majority of them who backed Trump, said that even if he gets convicted for a crime, it wouldn't change their opinion of Trump. How do we think about that? What is your reaction? And also, were you even surprised that Trump won by such a landslide in Iowa?
Well, first I'll say, I think that based on the polling, it was the expectation that Trump would win in Iowa. It is pretty scary to think, though, that on Monday, Trump won the Iowa caucus by 30 points, even as he's facing not just multiple civil trials, but has been indicted on 91 different criminal counts. And most of those counts are related to his actions to attempt to overturn an election he knew that he had lost in order to retain power the last time he was president.
And so this particular result may not be terribly surprising, but what does it mean for the rest of the primaries? Iowa caucuses are quite unusual, and sometimes they're not always indicative, are they, of how the rest of the primaries go? I'm looking at a Reuters story, and I just want to quote from it that in the case of Republicans, the state has not been a reliable barometer of national support. None of the winners of the last three Iowa caucuses in 2016, 2012, and 2008 went on to capture the party's nomination. That's largely due to Iowa's evangelical Christian community, which plays an outsized role in the process and tends to back the most socially conservative candidate in the field. So should we be making predictions based on these results?
Well, as some of your audience may recall, in 2016, it was actually Ted Cruz who won the Iowa caucus. And obviously, Ted Cruz did not go on to win the nomination. Unfortunately, however, based on the current polling, it is looking pretty likely that unless something big changes, that Trump will, in fact, become the Republican nominee for president again in 2024. And I think what that means for all of us is that there is a tremendous amount of education that needs to happen between now and November about the stakes of this election and about the difference between the two candidates. You know, in particular, about the fact that a second Trump presidency will be much more dangerous to our democracy than the first. We know so much more about Donald Trump than we knew the first time around. We know that when he lost the 2020 election, that he was so desperate to cling to power that he was willing to lie about voter fraud, to pressure state elected officials to go along with his lies, to overturn the will of voters in their states, and even to help manufacture fake slates of electors that we now know his campaign even helped transport to Washington. And when all of that failed, when all those attempts to overturn the will of the American people as expressed through a free and fair election failed, he incited a deadly insurrection on January 6th. Now we not only know what Trump is willing to do to cling to power, he knows a lot more about how he can manipulate our system and the office of the presidency in order to erode democracy for his own benefit. Trump, for example, has said that if he were elected again, that he would use the Department of Justice, weaponize the Department of Justice to get back against his political enemies, like President Biden, that he would use his office to pardon himself and other January 6th insurrectionists, that he would use the Insurrection Act in order to put down Americans, use the National Guard to put down Americans who are simply trying to exercise their First Amendment rights of free speech and protest. And now he knows enough to ensure that there would be no one around to say no to him. Often we were protected from Trump's actions during his first presidency, hopefully his only presidency, by the fact that there were people in place in the federal government around him who simply said no. But this time around, Trump and allies like the Heritage Foundation actually have a plan to toss out more than 50,000 civil servants in the government and in federal agencies and replace them with Trump loyalists so that there was no one left to say no when Trump tries to erode our democracy and to erode our basic freedoms.
There's also this very disturbing campaign called Project 2025. I'm not sure if this is linked to the Heritage Foundation's project, but do you know anything about this? And can you share it with our audience?
Yes, that's exactly what I was referring to. Mm. Project 2025 at this point has already started a database of thousands and thousands of resumes of Trump loyalists, folks that they would put into federal government positions, not just at the highest levels, political appointments like the presidential cabinet and the White House, but throughout levels of federal agencies, all the way down to middle management, based not on their qualifications, but based on their demonstrated loyalty to Trump, no matter what he says or what he does. And that's an incredibly scary concept.
Now, Trump faced the two major candidates that Trump faced in Iowa were someone who basically is promising voters that he will be the same as Trump, but without the baggage, which is Ron DeSantis, and the other, Nikki Haley, was the opposite, saying that she would be the complete alternative, that she was a sort of never leader of the Never Trump movement. And voters in Iowa, at least, GOP voters in Iowa, rejected both of those, which leads one to ask the question of what is the relationship between Trump and his voters. The New York Times has a story that just published in the wake of Iowa called "The Most Durable Force in American Politics Are Trump's Ties to His Voters." Is it just that they're enamored by his cult of personality, or that they are actually saying that they prefer authoritarianism to democracy?
You know, I think that there is a tremendous amount of misinformation out there. I think Trump's campaign and really his presidency were a fountain of misinformation. Trump has repeatedly lied about the 2020 election. He has repeatedly lied about his political opponents. There is a tremendous amount of disinformation out there on social media. And I think that is really contributing to this election and to some of the polling results that we're seeing right now. And that's why I mentioned earlier that we have, as advocates, as folks who care about democracy and who want to see Trump defeated again in 2024, that we have so much work to do to actually get out the truth in advance of this election. And that's actually what our members started 2024 doing. So Stand Up America is a national organization with nearly 2 million members in every state across the country who are focused on standing up for and defending our democracy. And they kicked off 2024 by sending thousands of letters to the editor to local papers across the country. Many have been published already, just stating the facts of what Trump is accused of in several of these indictments, of his attempts to overturn the 2020 election, and of his crimes, to continue to try and push back against that disinformation. And our members have really been engaged in that campaign for the last year and a half plus since the anniversary of January 6th last year. And we as an organization, in addition to, helping our members push back against disinformation in their communities, we'll also continue to educate voters about the stakes of this election, about the choice between continuing to erode our democracy and continuing to erode the fundamental freedoms that I think we think of when we think about what it means to be an American, the choice between a candidate who will do that and the choice between a candidate who will not. So, throughout this year, we'll be out there educating voters and also making sure that voters know how they can vote and they actually, get their ballots in or show up to vote on election day. We've had a lot of changes to election laws over the last couple of years. In some states, that's been a negative. It's meant that voter suppression laws have actually made it harder for voters to get out there and make sure that their ballots get counted. And so we'll be making sure that they know how to do that. And in other states, there has actually been increased ballot access, like a recent vote by mail law that was passed in New York and expanded ballot access in Minnesota. And we'll be out there communicating with voters, making sure that they get their ballots in and get them counted in those states where there are more voting opportunities as well.
There were some reports in Iowa with Democrats who basically registered to as Republicans in order to try to influence the caucuses. Some of that's happening in California as well, depending upon the rules of who can vote in primaries. There were legal efforts to keep Trump off the ballot in states like Colorado. I'm wondering if you have any thoughts on the primary elections and the potential of any of these strategies, either political strategies, organizing strategies, or legal strategies to keep Trump off of the ballot in at least one or more states.
Well, I think, right now we're waiting to see what happens with the Supreme Court. The Colorado case, the attempt to keep Trump off the ballot in Colorado, has gone to the Supreme Court. They will be hearing oral arguments soon in that case, in the beginning of February. To be honest, given the current makeup of our Supreme Court, I'm pretty skeptical, that they will uphold that outcome and actually keep Trump off the ballot in Colorado. I think the Supreme Court that we have now is a symptom of the Trump administration. Trump got three appointments to that Supreme Court, including folks like Brett Kavanaugh, the same folks who brought us an end to Roe v. Wade, for example. But we're certainly waiting to see what the court will do in those cases. I had heard about the effort in Iowa for folks to show up, folks who might have been independents, for example, and they can change their registration right there on that night and become Republicans and participate in the caucus. I did see some coverage where I saw someone at the caucus saying about 100 folks had on those red bands that meant that they had done that. So I'm not sure what the scale of that actually did end up being in Iowa. But yeah, I think we have yet to see whether or not any of these other candidates, like Nikki Haley, will in fact be able to pull off winning in any of these states.
And I'm wondering if going back to this idea of the Iowa caucuses kicking off the primaries, and influencing the kind of conversations around presidential elections, Iowa is not necessarily the most reflective, representative, demographically representative state in the nation, right? We seem to get this outsize impact from certain sectors of American society to presidential elections, all the way from the fact that Iowa kicks off our races down to how the Electoral College it works, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And for your audience who may be less aware of how the Electoral College functions, because our presidential elections are decided by Electoral College votes and not by the national popular vote, that really skews the outcomes and gives smaller states more of a say in who becomes president. And one of the reforms that Stand Up America is actually working toward is the passage of what's called the National Popular Vote Interstate Compact, which is a compact that about 200 electoral votes worth of states have actually passed already. Once we get to 270, it would go in effect. And the states within that compact have basically agreed that once we're at 270, that they will give their electoral votes to the presidential candidate who wins the popular vote, essentially going around the electoral college so that we could finally elect a president by national popular vote.
Right. Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us today, Christina. Give out a website for Stand Up America.
Yes, absolutely. You can visit our website at www.standupamerica.com. Or if you'd like to join our list, you can simply text STAND to 63033.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Christina. Really appreciate your time.
Yeah, thank you so much for talking about this important topic.
My guest has been Christina Harvey. She is the executive director of Stand Up America. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar, senior editor at Yes Media and host of Yes Presents Rising Up with Sonali. You can find this program at yesmagazine.org, watch it on Free Speech TV, and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. Our audio podcast is on iTunes and Spotify.